Hello and welcome to another episode of Good Morning Pride. My name is Eric Schlitt. Episode 9 today, and we have a very special guest returning to the podcast today. Morgan Cannon, welcome, buddy. Second time that we've got you on the show. Very positive response after the first show, and so I know you have more ideas that you wanted to bring to the table. So I'm glad you found some time to join me again. Welcome, buddy.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I was excited to get back on. Had a lot of fun last time, and I know people want their Lions content, right? So we're happy
Yes.
to give it to them.
So, we've spent the last couple episodes talking about the NFL draft and the picks that came out of it. But Morgan's idea stems from a usage standpoint. We have all these new players that have been brought in, and a lot of returning players as well, obviously. But it just it's what we wanted to talk about today was about how different players get used in different situations, and then how that sets up different personnel groupings, and what opportunities it has for players to get onto the field. So we're going to take it a little slow at first, talk about the offense, because I think it's a little bit more straightforward, a little bit easier to understand. And then we'll get into the defense a little bit later. That's more complicated. There's a lot of variance. There's a lot of options that the Lions can do, and based on what they've done in the past. So it can get a little tricky. You can get in the weeds pretty quick with that. So we'll start out slow, and we'll talk about offense. So do you have a position group that appeals to you that you want to talk about first, Morgan, or you just want to start up front?
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about there's not too much variance, obviously, with the offensive line. Ideally, you know, you're going to know your starting five. You're going to have from left to right, Decker, Glasgow, Ragnow, Seitler, and then Penei Sewell, which is, for my money, the best line in football. You know, maybe we're a little biased here, but but well, then I go ahead.
No, I was going to say, certainly, I think we all agree that they have the best offensive lineman in football in Penei Sewell. So,
agreed. Oh yeah, yeah, we're big. You know, if you don't know by now that we're big Penei Sewell fans, you must be a little new, but yeah, we love some Penei Sewell. But I am interested to see when, because Ben Johnson likes to throw it around when he has that six offensive linemen in the mix, you know,
sure.
going in motion. That's going to be interesting to see, because I don't think that's Dan Skipper's job like straight away anymore. I think there's going to be some competition for that. But beyond that, beyond the big guys, we'll get to the skill guys, because I know everyone likes to talk about that. And this is where I think, even as the Lions receiver group stands now, there's a lot of interesting combinations you can throw on the field at once, right?
Sure. Certainly. Let's start out by just talking about the starting five. Just in case, in an ideal world, the Lions like to run power heavy to the right. They want to be they want to bully people on the right side, and then the left, they tend to be more technical. So last year, I think Vitae was really the plan to play at right guard and to try and be that bully. But he was in a very, very tight competition with Graham, and then ends up getting hurt anyways, and Graham takes over. And Graham's not a bully. Graham's more of a technician, right? But he was arguably one of their best offensive linemen last year after Penei. So yeah, I think Graham did a great job. But now with the addition of Zeitler, Graham's shifting back over to left guard, and I think that's a little bit more in line with what they want to do. Now, Graham also has center flexibility. He played center at Michigan. He played center in the NFL. And he even spot started at center last year when Frank got hurt. So if there is an injury on the interior, Graham is the one that's the most position flexible, right? Mm-hmm. If Zeitler was injured, I think Sorsdahl, Mahogany, Manu, those are all guys that are more right guard heavy. if Graham gets hurt, maybe Aoshika has been the guy that they've leaned on in the past, but I still think some of the other reserves could do it as well. If Frank gets hurt, Graham shifts in, and then they got to replace, you know, Graham, someone at left guard, because they don't have a real natural replacement at center. So they basically have, you know, a very steady plan that I think we all know about on the interior. We've also seen what happens if one of the tackles gets hurt. If it's Panay, someone just steps in at right tackle. If it's Decker, then Panay shifts over to left and someone else steps in at right tackle. And so maybe that last year, the tendency was to lean towards Dan Skipper and then Sorsdal. I think that's probably going to be the plan again. My guess is Skipper does have a leg up. He also beat out Matt Nelson for OL6, that kind of big, that heavy set. And so I do think Skipper's in a good spot. At the same time, I agree with you that I don't think his OL6 job is safe, because there's a couple of really athletic reserves on the team that will be challenging him. Do you have a favorite who you think will challenge him, or just a collective group?
I'm glad you wanted to talk about offensive line too. I should have known. you know, I should have known better. I'm the same way, but you know, we're the same kind of sick there. But I in an ideal world, man, are we talking about specifically the OL?
Yeah, let's say OL. Yeah, just OL6. Like
jumbo package. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man,
normally it's been Dan, right? That Dan's the guy that reports, right?
I would love, I mean, this might be shooting out a little too, like, you know, far, but imagine if this was Giovanni Manu, because the things you could do with him in terms of like the stuff they do with Panay, right? Like leading, like on a counter, like Panay's pulling and getting out in space and like kicking out the edge, or like that, you know, that time where he bluffed the edge and then picked up the corner, like just insane stuff. Super advanced. So that'd be fun with Manu, but I mean, in a more realistic, maybe Colby.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
No, I hear you, because honestly, like if you're okay, when Matt Nelson was the OL6, they used Matt Nelson at the tight end spot.
Right.
Now what we saw more last year was when Dan Skipper came in, they tried him at the tight end spot, but then they started shifting him into right tackle and Panay out to the tight end spot. And I think that is really what they want to sink their teeth into, because Panay is the biggest, baddest guy, you know, on the planet right now. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I do think Skipper will be challenged by Sorsdal if they were looking for a guy to play right guard. Then you can kick Panay out. I do think Mahogany has a chance to contribute as well, especially if they want to go big in the backfield, Joe Dahl.
Shout out to Joe, our guy. Loving Joe. that's awesome.
Mahogany's got great, real good athleticism. You know, I think Manu gets a lot of credit because he's just such a behemoth, but Mahogany's got really underrated athleticism. And he, you know, I think we've all probably seen that touchdown that he ran and then did the keg stand after, right? Where Mahogany, right? And so he's not unfamiliar with hanging out in kind of like an H-back type role if they wanted to go power that way. So they've got really good options. You could go pure tight end. You can go, like, there's a lot of different ways to use a sixth offensive lineman. And I think a lot of different guys that they have at their disposal as well. Sorsdal, Mahogany, Manu all feel like they can contribute in that way. I don't know if I have a good feeling on anybody else being able to contribute in that way, right? And I think because of that position flexibility, because of that ability to contribute in a sixth role, that I think gives them an edge. I mean, it doesn't hurt that they're all drafted in the last 2 years as well, right? But I also think that's what keeps Skipper around too, is he's got flexibility to play everywhere from guard to tackle, and then also the sixth offensive lineman. And so in my mind, I'd be hard pressed to keep less than 9 offensive linemen, and Skipper, Sorsdal, Mahogany, and Manu make the most sense to me. Aoshika would be OL10, and it's just a matter of, do you have room for him in my book? But lots of flexibility to move from there. When we shift to running back, I think the flexibility is equally as big, right? Because Montgomery, Gibbs, and Vaki all have legitimate pass catching chops, which means that you can straight line them up in the slot or outside, which we saw last year. We also think you can do two back sets, right? You can line them both up in the backfield. You can put one in the backfield, one in the slot. We even saw them split both out in the slot at one point last year as well. So lots of flexibility with the running backs. And because of that, it just allows you to be so much more creative. Do you have good feelings about any of the other guys, like in their ability to, I think, contribute be on offense beyond just like as a running back? Like, do you feel comfortable putting any of these other guys, any of the other reserves, out in the slot or in a pass catching situation?
No, I think you hit it on the head there with Gibbs, Montgomery, and Vaki being the primary pass catchers out of that group. And I do agree with you, like, Ben Johnson is going to have so much fun with these personnel groupings. Like, yeah, when he can really get crazy here in 2024, but not on a pass catching bit. But I do like Zonovan. I like Zonovan Knight, man. I do think Zonovan Knight could be someone who, and I like Craig Reynolds. You know, this is a pro Craig Reynolds podcast. But, you know, I keep thinking about that when I look at the running back room, and I do think Zonovan Knight was running pretty well last year before he got banged up, if I remember correctly.
I think he was ahead of Craig at one point too. Like, he was taking snaps ahead of him, even though Craig's hung around forever.
Yes.
I do think they did favor Zonovan at one point before he got hurt.
And just from a pure running standpoint, I do think Zonovan offers more, like, you know, in terms of just as like toting the rock. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I was going to say, we don't want to necessarily dive into special teams here, but Reynolds, Knight, Vaki all have special teams ability as well. Not just returners, because all three have, you know, the capability to be returned, especially in the new system. But they also have, they have comfort as blockers, and they're just, I can see a situation where you keep all five. That's really heavy for a running back room, but with Vaki being kind of this multifaceted weapon, and with the new special teams rules, I think it's gonna be a real interesting battle if you can keep four or five of those running backs.
Yeah, because you just have so much flexibility there too, depending on how you want to deploy them, like on a week to week basis. So yeah, that's a good one. Do you want to move to receivers, pass catchers?
Because like at tight end, you have Laporta, who's essentially a receiver, right? But then like the rest of the guys are all kind of situational. Like James Mitchell has a little bit more range. Zylstra has some more range, but you're not going to find them really outside of the slot or in line. Laporta, you can move a little bit easier, but again, we kind of know what they are. You can go too tight end heavy. You can use all of them in the backfield as H backs. And so this is another position where we kind of know what they have, but what they have is some decent range, but what you would expect, I think, out of a tight end room with the Lions. So yeah. So all right. So let's shift to receiver. I think everyone knows the clear two starters are Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jameson Williams. Mm-hmm. Jameson's an outside receiver. Pretty much that's what he's going to do the majority of the time. Amon-Ra is primarily a slot, but his splits are closer to 50-50 for a few reasons. One, they like using him more on the outside. Two, when they do two wide receiver sets, he's on the outside. And so Amon-Ra is expanding out more, but you put him in a slot, you get a match in more advantageous spots. You also can use him in more gadgety type roles, which is really where he thrived last year. And so I think for the most part, we can just say, you know, from a technical standpoint, we can call Amon-Ra the slot receiver. So that X is kind of wide open though, right? And I think how they approach that X is going to be interesting, because they have some options, right? I wish they would have found a Josh Reynolds to make things a little cleaner. But I think what they're going to do is kind of a an outside receiver by committee type of thing, unless they sign someone that I'm not seeing, you know, that, or they trade for someone on the, that I, you know, I'm not envisioning right now. But do you have a, favorite guy who you think, you know, would have the, you know, the pole position for a starting role at that third outside, at that outside spot, that wide receiver three role?
I think I got to go with the hometown kid, right? You got to go with Donovan Peoples-Jones, Michigan kid. Went to Cass Tech in the city, and I do like his game. I think there's more, like, I feel like every catch he made for the Lions in 2024 was a big one. Like, I feel like it was always like conversion, or like, I got to have it down, like a money down, however you want to phrase it. So
yeah,
I do think DPJ is probably the front runner. He's a bigger body. It looked like Goff had some good rapport with him. And one thing, Lions receivers coach Antoine Randall-El and the rest of the coaching staff is going to like about Donovan is he likes to block. He's a big rocked up kid, and he wants to block. So he fits in with the rest of the Lions offense in that regard. What about you?
I think he has the body type that they're going to want to put out there in a lot of situations. But if you follow the money, that points to Khalif being the guy, because Khalif is the third highest paid receiver, and by quite a bit. Like, Khalif is making like 3.2, whereas Peoples Jones is only making like 1.3. And again, it doesn't seem like a whole lot, but it's almost double, right? Like, they invested. Plus, Khalif is signed through another season. They didn't. Peoples Jones isn't. At the same time, Peoples Jones is he's got former starter experience. He's got bigger size. It goes against my follow the money theory with him, but it sure seems like that's where they're leaning. Antoine Green could be kind of a sleeper for that spot. They drafted him for a reason, but they also didn't play him for a reason. They didn't give him those opportunities, and he was firmly in wide receiver six. Now he's probably wide receiver five, and you're hoping he's getting better. But that, I do expect Peoples Jones and Khalif to be the guys that get the majority of the attention on the outside in that way. And I wouldn't even be surprised if they platooned Peoples Jones and Khalif Raymond through the spot, right? Like, maybe Peoples Jones gets the start, and, you know, use them in like red zone situations, or, you know, early downs or something. But then you're using Khalif as a field stretcher, and you know, when you're in between the 20s as opposed to inside the 20, and you know, at the end of the day, the snap counts might be more similar, even though Peoples Jones is getting a little bit more love with a technical starting role. I also like the fact that you can kick Amon-Ra out. And if you do kick him out, Khalif is a more natural slot guy than DBJ, in my opinion. And again, more opportunities. So you don't necessarily have to use Khalif on the outside. If you want to bump Peoples Jones off the field, you can always just kick Amon-Ra, and then that makes an easier path for Khalif. The sixth wide receiver, I don't really have a guy who I'm like falling in love with here. I like Maurice Alexander. They had him on the practice squad all year. He's got return capability, but we're starting to say that of a lot of guys now. Tom Kennedy has always been Mr. Steady, but he's also been Mr. Practice Squad. Isaiah Williams, the UDFA out of Illinois, a lot of people are going to love him, but I need to see him more before I'm going to, you know, pencil him in at wide receiver six. Kennedy, Williams, they're both slot guys. They're pretty much slot guys only. Alexander has a little bit more range because he's kind of in that mold, like Khalif Raymond kind. He can play inside, he can play outside a little bit. But, you know, we could also see a veteran like Dries Fountain or Traquan Smith, who guys who have been in the league for a while, end up in that wide receiver six role if they end up having good camps. But The flexibility of St. Brown really creates an opportunity to not be completely dependent on having a guy with size. You know, there's going to be situations where you want Peoples Jones on the field. There's going to be other situations where Khalif is the better option. And so Amon-Ra really makes this group tick. Then when you add in the flexibility of the running backs, it just gives you even more opportunities. You know, 11 personnel is 11 personnel, one wide receiver, one tight end. 11 personnel, I'm sorry, one running back, one tight end.
There you go.
Sorry.
Yep,
thank
yep,
you.
Yep.
That gives you a lot of opportunity, and that's what most, you know, that gives you a lot of opportunity to put speed on field, and that's why a lot of teams utilize that. Lions have a lot of speed, but they also have a lot of speed at running back, and so, and with that position flexibility, I wouldn't be surprised to see them run more 21 and then split a running back out into the slot just because you have that flexibility. So I think this is all stuff we've seen before, but it's you know, it's neat to point it out. And again, that kind of key cog that makes everything work is the $30 million man in Amon-Ra St. Brown. So tell me, what am I missing? What am I wrong on? What am I missing? Am I selling somebody short? I feel like I'm overlooking something.
No, I like the conversation you brought up with the sixth receiver, because I really don't have any idea either. Like, maybe it's going to be tough, and it's like at the very, you're, you know, that's just going to be like, to put it with Brad Holmes, it's going to be a bloodbath. Is that what he said recently?
Certainly, he says that.
Bloodbath. All the time.
You know, the thing is I don't think they've ever really had the need to, like, they've never really gone into camp with like a solid six, right? They've always gone in with a solid four or a solid five, and then they kind of just work it out.
Yeah. And I loved last... your, I love, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I loved your point about like with Khalif, because that's it. I do like, you put Amon-Ra out wide, and a lot of the, like towards the end of the year, we were getting a good amount of where they'd have Jameson Williams and Amon-Ra on the same side, like lined up in a little like duo. And I love that, because then you can, you motion Khalif to the opposite side of the field, and you're just stretching the heck out of that defense horizontally. And I love that. So I think we'll get higher dosages of that, right?
Yeah, essentially, Khalif, look, if there's a guy, there's probably the three fastest players on this team, I think, are Jameson, clearing away, Gibbs, and then Khalif. And Khalif might even be up there, like, right near Gibbs. If, I mean, he's, Khalif is legit. He's really suited for the Z, which is where they use Jameson a lot. But if they, look, Josh Reynolds was a Z. Like, that's where he was best. And they moved him out to the X because they needed him to. If they want to, you know, double up St. Brown and Jameson, and they put Jameson at the X, you absolutely can slide Khalif out to the Z and just let him stretch that side, and then let the two young studs go attack the other side, and it creates opportunities, especially when you have Sam and Zach, one of the backs out there. I mean, like, it's really a wealth of options for Ben Johnson. So I don't think this is anything like that people don't know, but it's, you know, and it's a lot of stuff we saw last year. It's just going to be interesting. Like, I don't think they're, because they didn't land an X, it doesn't mean that they're, you know, going to take like a big step back or anything. I think it would have been easier to retain a guy like Josh Reynolds and put him out there. That would have been awesome. But by no means are they going to be limited. They still have this opportunity to shift guys around. So,
absolutely. Right. Yeah. There's going to be lots of ways to get it done, right? For sure. Go ahead.
Certainly. Certainly. You want to flip to defense, or you got anything to add on offense?
No, we can flip to defense. Let's get to it. Let's, you want to start in the trenches, or?
Yeah, always. Always start in the trenches. So McNeil's your most position flexible. He's your three technique when DJ Reader's on the field at the nose. When DJ Reader is off the field, you probably shift to Leem to the nose, and you bring on a different guy. If you need to give both McNeil and Reader a spell, you're hoping Broderick Martin is ready to contribute this year. Reader and Martin are pretty much nose tackles. They're going to be primarily nose tackles. Now, both have a little bit of range to kick to the three. For those who don't know, the three is basically like in between the guard and the tackle. So a nose tackle lines up, a zero lines up directly over the center. And then the gap in between the center and the guard is called the one gap. So a lot of times with nose tackles, you'll hear people say they're the zero or the one. The zero means they line up directly over the center. The one means they line up in the gap between the center and the guard. So Reader's most of the time going to end up at the zero or the one, but he is also flexible enough. And I think we've seen this from Martin. He's athletic. Martin is athletic enough. They can even kick out to the three if they want to, which is all the way on the other side of the guard between the guard and the tackle. That's where Aleem's going to live most of the time, in that three. And you typically don't want to have your base using 2-3 techniques, because that leaves the middle open like quite a bit. And then you're asking your linebackers essentially to fill the gap with that the center's blocking. And it just makes it a mismatch where you're giving an advantage to the offensive line. So most teams, especially ones that run the 4-3 like the Lions do, will have a nose tackle that shades in between the zero or the one, which then keeps the offensive line honest and then allows you to attack in different ways. So most of the time it's going to be Reader and Broderick. Aleem has flexibility to play at that three technique, which is more of a pass rushing role, but he also can play the zero or one. And then when you start getting into depth behind those three, Wingo, Levi Onwuzurike, these guys are all three techniques who actually wouldn't kick inside, but they actually kick outside. So the five technique is more is like right over the tackle. And that's where they will live. When we talk about the edges, we'll talk about how a couple of the edges live kind of in that like five technique. You also find them at the 4-I, which is on the inside shoulder of the right tackle. So it's the three is in between, the four is like on the inside shoulder, the five is heads up, and then, you know, keeps like going numerically out after that. But Wingo, Onwuzurike, those guys are going to be mostly 3 to 5. You could argue maybe they get out to 6 or 7, but mostly they're living at the three. And so again, like with Amon-Ra, Aleem gives you that flexibility to keep him on the field, but bring in a variety of different backups. You can bring Martin on and keep Aleem on, and he can just, it can be business as usual. You can kick Aleem and bring Wingo on and add more pass rush, right? Again, it's not like they're absolutely defined to these roles, but this is where they tend to be their best, right? Like if you want to bring McNeil and Wingo on and you want to run them both in the three technique because it's a pass rushing situation and you don't care what the center is going to do because you don't think they're going to run up the middle, absolutely put two guys in the three and then let them attack the gaps and put pressure on the guards and the tackles. Because the outside guys are going to be putting pressure on the tackles, so you're going to, you know, put pressure on the guards with the threes. You can absolutely do that in certain situations. But in your kind of base situation, it's mostly that kind of defensive tackle three technique. I feel like I just explained, I like over-explained it.
That's good.
What did I miss?
That's good you broke that down, because I do think a lot of fans hear things like three tech, one tech, and they're probably like, oh, what's, you know, if you haven't looked it up, you're like, what's that? So it really does, like that was a good job of explaining it, just like keeping it simple, because it is simple. You just got to know the numbers, and this is how they tell people to line up. And this is what's going to be so cool, guys, like with Reader in the picture, right? Like Reader is a premier run stopper in this league, and he's been that way for a while now. So like Eric said, having Reader at the zero, the one, he's going to be able to occupy space. He's almost like an immovable object in there. And when I watched his film, as an opponent, you have to double Reader, because if you don't, he's going to be like, oh, you're disrespecting me and trying to block me with one person. I'm gonna walk them directly into your backfield and just cause chaos. Like he's Godzilla back there. Like he really, he just wreaks havoc, man. So this is what's cool for Aleem and the linebackers for sure. The linebackers are gonna love DJ Reader, and then so is Aleem, so is Hutch, and the rest of the guys. But you're freeing up Aleem at the three tech to essentially on passing downs and even on running downs sometimes just attacking the outside shoulder of the guard. Like we call it attacking half a man, right? So it makes things much easier for Aleem, who's probably pretty used to being double teamed and getting chipped and, you know, that kind of thing, playing where he's played, you know, through his career. But yeah, I'm really excited for Aleem to be able to just eat more of his snap share at the three tech, because I think it's going to pay big dividends.
So when you have Reader at the one, which is in between the guard and the center, you're asking those two, you're essentially committing him to a double team. If they choose not to double team him, he's going to go straight down the pipe at you.
And going to run through your chest.
Right. And that's going to be hard for the quarterback, because the pocket's not going to collapse from the sides. It's going to collapse from the middle. And that can be really problematic for a quarterback to have it coming right in his grill there. So that's essentially why he's going to get a lot of double teams, which is going to put Aleem in real good situations. It also, like you said, it'll free up the gaps for the linebackers. Now, just because football overcomplicates things, the gaps in between each of the offensive linemen are letters, not numbers, right? So the A gap is the same. So if you're a one technique, you're lining up in what's called the A gap in between the center guard. If you're in the three technique, you're lining up in the B gap, which is in between the guard and tackle. And then if you're outside the tackle, that's essentially like the C, but it's often referred to as other things. But the way you kind of have to look at it, because you'll hear both terminologies, is you'll hear like, oh, the linebacker has to attack the A gap. That's essentially where the one technique plays. Or if you're, you know, it's in between the center and guard. So if you're taking Reader and you're putting him at the one, and you're at, and then the center is dropping on him and the guard is dropping on down, that's leaving the B gap, which is the space between the guard and the tackle open, which is then typically where the linebackers fill. And that's also where the running backs will often try to attack as well, because that's where the offensive line creates their holes with when they double. And so again, this is just kind of, these are basic examples. It gets, obviously it's more layered and complicated, but that's one of the reasons why I think Reader is so good, is he can, just because how he occupies. So while Reader does have that flexibility to shift to a three, you don't necessarily want him out at the three too often, because you don't want to have him attacking the B gap as a pass rusher and then allowing them to double team Aleem, because Reader's not as good of a pass rusher as Aleem is. And so you want them to also almost force their hand and say, we're going to bring him right down the middle and you've got to double team him, which then leaves my other defensive tackle, who's the better pass rusher, more freed up. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of shifts from, you know, how they use their nose guys. With Reader and Martin, they're pretty much the zero ones. Like that's where their job is going to be occupy. McNeil gives you that flexibility to do a lot. But the defensive, when you start incorporating the defensive ends into this mix, it gets a little bit more complicated as well. So when we look at the edge rushers, they have three kinds of edge rushers. They have your just kind of straight up traditional edge rusher, which is like Aiden Hutchinson. He's a guy who can attack you outside. He can attack you inside. He can go around the tight end. He can go through the tight end. He's just a pure guy who comes off the edge. Davenport, in a lot of ways, is like that as well. So if they're trying to create more pass rush, having those two guys is probably going to be their most ideal base pass rushing set. Josh Pascal and John Kaminsky, they're more of what we call like a closed end, which means that they're shaded in closer to the five technique as opposed to being a little bit more outside at like the seven where Aiden typically lives at the seven or even the nine. Cause Aiden will go within the nine sometimes too, cause it creates impossible angles for these tackles. So
think with Jim Schwartz, folks.
Yeah. Right. Yes, exactly. Where they're like way nine. Out there.
Yeah.
So with Kubinski and Pascal, they are more like they can play the seven, but they're more suited for like a five. Yeah. And so historically over the last couple of years, we've seen a pure pass rusher on one side and then an edge setter on the other side, which is where Kubinski and Pascal have been so valuable. They've been guys that you're asking to close the gap, shut the tackle down, set the edge, and stop the run. And if you can get to the pass rusher, great. But that's more of what you want your defensive tackle to do. But it's all part of their ideology to stop the run. But you lose some pass rush when you have Kubinski or Pascal on the field in those situations. Pascal, I think, has a little bit more range, but essentially the both of them have kind of been used like that. Mm-hmm. Now, Pascal and Kubinski, and really Hutchinson and Davenport can do this too, but more Pascal and Kubinski, those guys can kick into the three technique. So in situations where you want a more of a pass rush on the interior, like in third downs, like third and longs or something like that, you'll see the Lions move Aleem to the nose, or maybe he'll just shift to the nose spot, but still stick out at the three. And then they'll use either Kubinski or Pascal. They used to use Aiden there, but not as much last year. But Kubinski and Pascal will kick into the three. So now you have more of an athlete who is, you know, still built stout for that kind of five, but you're playing them more at the three because you're hoping to push the pocket on the interior. If you push the pocket from the interior, you occupy the guard, which gives Aiden one-on-one with the tackle, which is really what you want. And so that's the value of guys like Kubinski and Pascal. The other value is when they are in the five, it creates an opportunity for the pass rushing linebacker, which the Lions call the Sam. In most 4-3 defenses, the Sam is it's like an off the ball role, but not the way the Lions run it. The way the Lions run it, the Sam is a pass rushing linebacker. James Houston is the one that most people are going to know. When you have a guy like Kubinski or Pascal that set the edge or can close down that tackle, it allows you to get a pass rushing linebacker one-on-one with tight ends or, you know, with tackles. If they end up passing like Kubinski off to a guard or something. So this third layer of outside linebacker is something that they looked for all of last year. And when Houston got hurt, that's when they turned to Derek Barnes, who played that role for his first 3 years at Purdue before he switched off the ball. They turned to Jack Campbell for that role. Campbell played that role quite a bit because they just wanted to find ways to get Campbell on the field. But I think in an ideal world, you would have a healthy James Houston as a contributor in that role as well. That's a situational role, though. That's not part of their base. It's not something they're going to use a lot. They're going to use it in specific situations when they want to bring an extra pass rusher. So they have three pass rushers instead of four. So this creates all kinds of opportunities with their edge rushers to where they can go three and four edge rushers on the field at a time, where and you do that in order to get more speed and athleticism, which gives you in situations where you're not worried about the run, right? The reason you want those big guys in the middle is because you're stopping the run. But if you're not worried about stopping the run because you're in third and long or whatever, like put as many athletes on the field as you can and get after it. And now the Lions have the opportunity to do that because they have this layered system. So in their base, I'm guessing it's going to be Aiden and Davenport. Historically last year it was Aiden and Charles Harris, who quickly got benched for Kaminsky, who then eventually gave way to Pascal. And Pascal kind of finished the season as the starter. But Kaminsky and Pascal basically split reps all year. I initially didn't think Davenport was coming in to be the starter opposite Aiden, but I've changed my tune of late. Do you have a gut feeling on if they're going to stick with like the Kaminsky Pascal on the opposite side, or do you think it's going to be Davenport? Because I'm kind of wishy-washy. I've changed my mind a couple of times here.
I like Davenport at that spot just for some of the reasons you laid out, right? And I like the fact that you talked about, you know, getting, because yes, I agree with you. Pascal and Kaminsky are good players. Like, they're going to have a place in this league for a while because of what they're three down players, right? But
yeah,
to your point, that they don't necessarily offer a ton of juice when it comes to rushing the passer. However, when you get into these obvious passing downs, these third and longs, where you're taking Reader off the field, you know, and you're putting, like, this is where Pascal and Kaminsky both, I think more so Pascal, I'm pretty high on him still. I think he's just a powerfully built athlete that can make some hay in there. But I think he can have a lot more success rushing the passer against guards and centers than tackles, just because of, you know, there's a lot of good centers. There's a lot of good interior offensive linemen who are really good against, you know, protecting the passer. But for the most part, tackles are typically the more technically proficient and sound offensive linemen because they're dealing with the freaky, freaky athletes on the edge.
Yeah, I think if you look at Kentley Plattie's RAS, and when you look at when a player tests grades out as a tackle, they usually receive a lower score than they do as a guard, because that's that's because the athletes. So there's you know, a very viable, you know, evidence that backs up that statement that you're saying right there.
Yeah, so I think being able to roll Pascal in there, and I think that's their plan with Davenport. So hopefully he can stay healthy and put some good tape out there for like almost like if Davenport can play, man,
yeah,
you know, 14 games and above, I think that's you're cooking. Like, because I do think he's bringing to the table what they've wanted, what more of what they've wanted. Maybe not like to a perfect one for one fit, but I do think he's bringing more to the table that they've wanted at that spot opposite Hutchinson, at that closed end, that five tech. Just so he's big, he's physical, he can set the edge, but then I think he offers more chops getting to the quarterback.
So it's Aaron Glenn has done a variety of different things with this front over the years. And we've talked about this in the past, that he's essentially put a system in place and then changed it halfway through the year, all three seasons. So he's essentially run like six different schemes over his 3 years, trying to adjust to the players that are playing the best. And what we saw more of last year was a lot more Aiden on the left side or over the right tackle. And I think that suits him and the way he attacks better. I think there are still a lot of teams that, you know, often that think, oh, the right tackle is not going to be as athletic. And so, you know, that stick with those old school mentalities. But Aiden tends to be on the right. And if he's on the right or on the, you know, over that right tackle, the other spot, which is typically where your like kind of speed pass rusher is, that's where they've had to line up the other guys that aren't really necessarily made to be speed rushers. So if they want to keep Aiden over the right tackle, adding a guy like Davenport, it makes sense that he would be that he could potentially be in a starter spot because they want to add more of a pure pass rusher on that side of the line. They're still going to use Kaminsky. They're still going to rotate guys. I mean, Hutchinson's going to move all over the field just because he never leaves it.
And I do like when they get reps for Hutchinson against guards because, man, he overwhelms most of those cats so quickly. Like, it's just
Right. No, certainly.
It's tough to deal with,
So if I had to guess, I'd guess they'd keep five edge rushers. And I would say Hutch and Davenport are probably your projected starters. Pascal and Kaminsky are your multi-tool players. And James Houston is probably the guy you're hoping turns into your dedicated pass rushing linebacker. And then we'll see what the competition is from the other guys. And you know, there's going to be some interesting guys in camp, and we'll see how they go. But I think James would get the nod here. Could they be forced to keep six? It'd be interesting. But with their linebackers, they kind of have some crossover, right? Like having James Houston is great as a dedicated pass rusher, but you also have five linebackers that returned that all played roles last year. I mean, all played roles on defense last year. And having that third Sam spot as that pass rusher was certainly helpful. Now, so the Lions have three linebacker roles. Their Mike, their Will, and their Sam. Like we just talked about, the Sam is more of a pass rusher. They're going to pass rush like 90% of the time. And they will drop occasionally, mostly just to keep defenses on it, to keep offenses honest. Mm-hmm. Also, because I don't think they have a Sam that they're comfortable dropping. They really haven't had a really good situation. And
they'd like one.
Yeah, and they ended up leaning on the off the ball guys to give them that because they had that drop, the ability to drop. But it's really not like they almost were playing out of position by playing the Sam. Derek Barnes, okay, to give people an example of how the Sam's was being used late in last year. Derek Barnes was lined up in the Sam role against Tampa Bay on Tampa's final drive in the playoffs. He was set up on the line of scrimmage in the Sam role in a pass rushing role. But because, and in most situations he'd be blitzing, but they blitzed the other side. I don't remember if they blitzed Anzalone or Branch. I think they blitzed Branch and shifted Anzalone over. And then they did like a faint blitz with Barnes and then dropped him in the coverage. And when they did that, that's why Baker didn't see him, because Baker was expecting him to come off the edge on the right, saw the pressure from Branch on the left, and then said, I should have my backdoor tight end open. And so then he felt the pressure quick, made a decision, went to that tight end. But Barnes in that Sam role did the fake blitz, dropped into coverage and fell under it. Game-winning interception. And so ideally, that's how the Sam would be utilized. But I think they really like Derek as the Mike, right? Like they don't, and I don't think they want to put him in that role, but they also drafted Jack Campbell to be the Mike as well. So it's like they have a really interesting wealth of talent at the Mike, and they tried to play both of them. Kind of like with Pascal and Kaminsky, is they ended up giving both of them like over 50% of snaps. They just shifted them around to different roles. And then how Aiden never leaves the field, Alex Anzalone rarely left the field. Right. And so they found a way to use all three linebackers, but I don't think they really wanted to use them all that way. At the same time, if James Houston isn't playing the way they want, or if he isn't showing that ability to drop, I could absolutely see them going back to that and situationally getting their best three linebackers on the field, because Derek Barnes can drop, Jack Campbell can drop out of that Sam role. And so if we're talking like just to give you a visual as best we can for the listeners, the Mike is essentially lining up behind like the defensive tackles. He might be in between the gaps of the defensive tackles and the edge, but essentially he's like almost directly behind one of the defensive tackles. The Will is going to be also kind of either directly behind a defensive tackle or in the gap between the defensive tackle and the the outside edge guy. The Sam is like all the way on the edge, outside of the edge rusher, and he's typically like all the way up on the line of scrimmage. So they're very different roles in how they're getting utilized. And the only reason that the Lions use the term Sam is because of how the stupid reasoning behind how all linebackers get their names, right?
Yep.
So for those who don't know, the Mike is, it starts with the letter M, which is, and they typically are in the middle of the field, right? Yep. So Mike middle. So the Mike is typically in the middle of the field. The Will is on the weak side of the line, which is typically over the left tackle or the left side of the offensive line. And the Sam is on the strong side of the line. And so they got these names, Will, Mike, and Sam, only because of which side of the line they're lining up on. The Lions use two off the ball linebackers and they use one other linebacker on the line of scrimmage. They just happen to call it a Sam because it's typically on the strong side of the offensive line. The strong side of the offensive line would be where the tight end lines up, right? So that's why they call it the Sam. You'll often see on, if you look at my depth chart that I write at Pride Detroit, or if you've seen it on my Patreon, the star position, the Brian Branch star position, it's a star with an S because it typically lines up on the Sam side of the line of scrimmage. Like, it's, again, it's an outside of the tackle box position that's over the slot, just like the Sam linebacker is kind of over the slot. So you're like, that star position is in that slot range outside of your off the ball guys. And so, again, some people call it the nickel, some people call it the star. It just depends on whatever system it is that they run. But they get these nicknames for the positions based on where they line up on the field in relation to the offensive line. So don't get caught up with like what the Sam is, and just the Lions run have two off the ball linebackers, one linebacker that will situationally come on the field at the line of scrimmage. Lions just happen to call it a Sam. All right. Yep. I'm just,
that's basically how it shakes down. No, you did a good job breaking it all down.
Well, it's easily confused, right?
Exactly. And I do agree with your point about, much like the position we're going to talk about here in a minute, but you know, if Houston's not working or they're not getting what they want out of those personnel groupings, I do think there's a world where, you know, Campbell's going to be your Mike, Anzalone's going to be your Will, and then Barnes is going to be your Sam, and then he's going to rotate in at Mike and Will too, just because they do like Barnes a lot. And I like Barnes a lot. We like Barnes a lot. So mm-hmm. I do think, you know, Anzalone will be one of the, like, probably a player that rarely comes off the field. And I do think Jack's snap percentages will go up this year, but I do think, you know, Barnes will still get some reps, and heck, even Malcolm. Like, I mean,
mm-hmm.
Malcolm had a pick in the NFC Championship game, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, let's talk about that for a second. In the game against Tampa, they rotated who was the Sam, but against the 49ers, it was all Jack Campbell. They only played Jack at the Sam, and Derek was the Mike, and Anzalone was the Will. When Barnes got hurt, against most opponents, Jack just would have been the Mike then, and they would have just played without a Sam. But they wanted a Sam against the 49ers because they wanted to have five on the line to stop McCaffrey. So they didn't want to shift. They didn't have a replacement Sam that they were comfortable with. And so they didn't want to move Jack off the Sam. That's why Malcolm came on and played the Mike, which is really not his best position. His best position is the Will. Yep. But Malcolm ended up having to play the Mike out of position because they didn't want to move Anzalone off the Will, because the Will tends to see a little bit more coverage, and I think Anzalone, that's where they liked him at best. He's thrived since they put him at the Will. And
Truly.
they didn't want to move Jack off the Sam because they wanted to keep that run defense stout. And so you ended up playing, if it wasn't the 49ers, if that was like the Packers, like they would have just shifted Campbell to the mic and it would have been, you wouldn't have missed a beat. But because of what they were focused on with the 49ers, they didn't want to shift these guys around too much. And they ended up playing them out of position. And look, man, Malcolm does what Malcolm does, and he ends up making a play, which is great for him. But that, again, it kind of shows you the flexibility. The difference between the Mike and the Sam isn't much, okay? They're both off the ball rolls. The Mike is typically on he shades towards the strong side. So wherever the tight end lines up, you tend to see him, the one off the ball guy that will be closer to the tight end is almost always the Mike. And typically that's going to be Barnes or Campbell. We saw it as Malcolm against the Niners. The Will is on the non-tight end side, shaded towards the non-tight end side. And then that puts them typically in responsibility for if a running back comes out of the backfield. If a running back leaks, then you can have them, or if a slot receiver comes over the middle and if you're in zone or something, right? And so, like, you tend to want more of an athlete at that Will, and Anzalone is more of an athlete. That's why they like him there. Good instincts, good athleticism. Campbell and Barnes, yeah. Campbell and Barnes they can hit. They're big. They're bigger. They can Thumbers. Run. They can hit, right? And so that you like those guys at the mic because typically teams will run towards their tight end. So you put the mic on that side, and those guys hit the gaps. They also hit the ball carrier, and so they tend to be more run oriented, whereas the Will's a little bit more pass oriented. So they didn't want to move Anzalone off the mic. They like both Barnes and Campbell. And they did show them a lot rotating between the Sam and the Mike spot, but it just depended on opponent. And I think that kind of speaks to how this whole front operates, is they can do different things for different opponents, right? If you have an opponent that you will need to stop the run, you can go heavier with your front. You can bring an extra linebacker on to keep five on the line but still maintain your athleticism. If you've got guys that are almost completely run, you may just go bigger bodies up front altogether, and you may not worry about the extra athleticism of a linebacker, you know, and you may have like Hutchinson, Davenport, and James Houston just living out there the whole time. They have lots of options, and that's really what this defense wants. And what Aaron Glenn has been trying to work towards for 3 years now is having a defense that can match up against whatever opponent is in front of them, and having the personnel and the depth of the personnel that they can adjust their fronts and their linebackers accordingly. So,
yeah, and I love your point that you made earlier, like when you said, you know, that's the goal, right? To be able to match personnel groupings and different skill sets. Like you talked about having five on the line against the Niners. And this is where I think, you know, some people need to give Aaron Glenn some more flowers, because like you talked about at the top, like he's changed his scheme a bunch of times,
right,
to try to make it work. Like he's not one of these coaches that's like, oh, I'm going to run the wide nine, or I'm going to run, you know, a 3-4 and I have to get my guys to run my 3-4, my version of it.
Right.
So I give Glenn the credit there, because to him, like, it really seems like it's just, they've been accruing good football players and good athletes, and they're going to put them in positions to succeed. And that's what good coaching is. You know,
these guys, this team can run 3-4, 4-3, 5-2. They can run anything, bare fronts. Yeah. They can run it all.
And they've got the personnel to do it all. Excellent. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And that has been very purposeful. In the players they've acquired, right down to drafting Wingo in the sixth round. Trying to get a guy who can bring more interior pass rush, because that was a missing element that they didn't have. All right.
Should we hit the front secondary, six, cap this off?
Yeah. Yeah. That's your front six, front seven. Yeah. With a bow there. So the secondary it's a little trickier, because I don't think there's a clear, like these guys fit in this spot. I think they purposefully have guys who can play multiple spots, either situationally or just in general. And that gives them a ton of flexibility. So, you want to start on the outside, or you want to start like with your interior guys in the second?
Why don't we start outside in? Because this will be a good way to talk about, like, okay. I want to see what you think about this. So, in my opinion, it gets interesting towards the middle of the field. So we'll start on the outside and we'll talk about nickels and safeties after, because I think those kind of go hand in hand the way we're thinking about this. But
yes,
in my opinion, I do think you have your two outside starters, and obviously anything can happen in camp, and you know, people can be unseated, and you know, but I do think it's going to be Carlton Davis the third, and then Terrion Arnold at the outside. And with both of those guys, they give you the option to, you can play some man heavy. Like if you're playing the team that you need to go man heavy and you want to get after the quarterback, and you can do that. And I think you're in a much better position than you were last year, again, the NFC Championship game, personnel wise. But this is where it gets interesting to me. But first, I want to see, do you agree with the Terrion and Carlton thing?
Yeah, that's my projection right now as well. Yep. I think those so. Two are probably the guys that are going to win the starting jobs. You may not see, like, when training camp starts out, you might see Robertson or Mosley as the starters, because Lions tend to favor their veterans. But I think by the end, I think Davis and Arnold are probably the most talented.
I think so too. And then this is where it gets interesting, right, guys? Because this, it's come up a couple times so far through this little review that we've done here. And you want to get your best players on the field. And in my opinion, I'm high on Rake Straw. Right. Mm. Like we're very high on Brian Branch here. He's one of my favorite players on the Lions. But in my opinion, I think Rake Straw is going to push his way, almost similar to what happened with Brian Branch and CJ Gardner-Johnson last year. I think Rake Straw might make his case where he's so good that they're like, you know what, we gotta put this kid at nickel for a little bit, and then we'll put BB out back, and we'll up, you know, at the second safety next to Kirby. But yeah, what do you think about Rake Straw? Like, I mean, he has that positional flexibility to be outside or inside.
Yeah, so both Rake Straw and Arnold were the most talented defensive backs on each of their rosters. When they went into their nickel sets, I don't think either Alabama nor Missouri had like pure nickels that they liked. And so what they would end up doing is they would shift Arnold and Rakestraw into the nickel in order to bring on another outside corner, because that afforded them the Arnold and Rakestraw's ability to kick inside afforded them the opportunity to get their best secondary players on the field all at the same time, as opposed to, you know, if they stayed on the outside, you'd have to bring in a lesser tier nickel who maybe isn't as good as the outside guy that you were bringing on. And that flexibility of Arnold and Rakestraw to play inside has given them a lot of, gave their teams a lot, put them in better situations. With Detroit, I do think you can see a similar situation as that, where the fact that they didn't draft a nickel, they didn't sign a nickel, and they just have gone with Brian Branch, and then they're talking about playing Brian Branch at safety. It sure seems like, okay, if you're going to do those things, you've got to use one of your outside guys inside. And both Arnold and Rakestraw have that capability. Rakestraw and Arnold are so similar in so many ways. Like they really are. They're both real physical against the run. They're both real physical, and they can both kick inside. And I think like their physicality and their quickness make them guys that should have success on the inside in the NFL. I really would prefer not to move Arnold, and I would be okay with moving Rakestraw. And if there's a situation where you have an injury like to Kirby or Iffy, then you need to move Branch, I think you absolutely could probably put Rakestraw in the middle. The trick is just going to be how fast can the rookies learn? Because even what we saw with Brian Branch last year, they were expanding his role until the point where he wasn't doing as well. And then they scaled the role back, went, okay, this is where you're at. The Lions will test you. They're going to take every one of their rookies and they're going to push you positionally and keep trying to give you more responsibility and expand what you should know. And once you hit a point where it's a diminishing return, they're going to scale it back. And then they're going to be like, okay, this is what you're going to learn as a rookie. They've done it with every rookie, Branch included. So yep. They're going to do the same thing with Rakestra and Arnold. The question just becomes, because they're used to playing inside, is that going to afford them more opportunity where you maybe don't have to scale it back on them, or nickel is going to be an easier position to fill? And so I'm very interested to see where they go, because I do agree, if Branch is moving, Arnold and Rakestra make the most sense. And if Arnold is one of your starters, then it does make a lot of sense to use Rakestra in that nickel role. Because look, you can even move Brian to off-ball linebacker. You know what I mean? Like you move Brian a lot of spots.
That's right? True. Just keep
and
him
so,
on the field.
Yes. Yep. Brian should never leave.
Agreed.
So yeah, you can absolutely look, you can go to dime. Look, there's a lot of teams that can go four wide, and you're gonna need a second nickel. I think Rakestra makes a lot of sense to do that. People are going to look at Amik Robertson and say, oh, doesn't he play the slot? He really doesn't. He's kind of like Khalif in the fact that he plays a lot on the outside, even though he's got inside size. He's mostly successful outside.
It'd be better for people just to think of Amik as being 5'10". Like just add, like that's the way he plays. Like it's just, right. So yeah, but go on. Yeah.
Well, no, I was going to say, but if Robertson and Mosley play as well as we think they could on the outside, Rakestra may be outside corner five, but inside corner two. You know what
two.
I mean? Like, yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, honestly, like, well, I mean, he could be the guy behind Branch. Like, so it's going to be interesting to see how they shake out. But the both rookies' ability to kick inside, I think it's going to be very beneficial. Khalil Dorsey has some reps inside that he's done. He's mostly an outside kind of outside guy, but he's played inside a little bit. But they really don't have like guys that are comfortable playing inside outside of the rookies. So when we talk about the secondary, the interior guys, maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that. But yeah, if you're talking about kicking an outside guy in, which makes a lot of sense, sure seems like the rookies are the ones that can do it.
Yeah, and I think if that's the case, you have Rakestra at the nickel and you push BB, Brian Branch, back with Kirby, then you have so much playmaking ability back there. And you have, you know, ideally, yes, Kirby's, in my opinion, better away from the line of scrimmage, where he's just, you know, playing a deep third and reading the quarterback's eyes and making plays on the ball. But he's also good around the line of scrimmage and can get better with his tackling. But I think that just, you know, comes with experience. But with BB, man, we've already seen it. Like the playmaking chops are there. He'll come up near the line of scrimmage and just bolo people. Like he's a do it all. Like you talked about, you could have him at off ball linebacker, like on passing downs, and you can really get creative with your personnel groupings. And let's not forget Ifeatu Melifonwu. And this isn't us being low on Ife. I like Ife's game. And especially if you take those games he had at the end of last year and you extrapolate them out to a full season, that's going to be a really impressive resume, man. Like he played really well. I want to see it for a full season, don't you? Like before we're throwing him in there at a full start, a 100% starting role.
Yeah, I mean, certainly he's got the injury history that you have to be worried about. For me, he was arguably their best defensive back the last 5-6 weeks of the season. Like the best. He was better than everybody other corner out there. Every corner and safety out there. He was just sensational. And Ife in a lot of ways is like he's got some Brian Branch instincts to him, where you can drop him in the slot, you can blitz him, Jeremy wrote an article over Pride of Detroit, like the most disruptive defensive back in the NFL last year was per snap basis was Brian Branch. And then The second, if depending on what your snap count was, because like you just said, if he missed a lot of the season with an injury, but if you just use like a minimum of like 500 snaps, if he was number two as the second most disruptive defensive back in the NFL. And so Kirby, you look, they run a lot of too high, right? So they have two interchangeable safeties that they'll put up in their too high shells. But when there's a lot of times that they'll just run Kirby in the post, right, at the single high, right, and then drop Iffy down. And so this is another way for them to combat a dime situation where the opponents are bringing like four wide receivers on the field. You can drop Iffy into that slot. Like you can have Branch in one slot, Iffy in the other, and then have your outside guys and still feel comfortable because Kirby's got elite range over the top. And so in my mind, Branch, Kirby, Iffy are your starters. But the contingency plans with the injuries that you have to be worried about is you want to cross train Branch to be able to play a deep safety role. You want to have ideally someone that can then kick inside. Maybe that's Rakestra, right? But I think Kirby's role is essentially he's a single high or a two high safety. I think that's what Kirby is, and he's great at it. If he's a lot more flexible, and man, the way that Glenn found to blitz him and to unlock him was like silly. It was really silly. It was like
crazy effective.
We'd seen him try that stuff in the past with other safeties and it just not work. But there's a reason that they've stuck with Iffy for as long as they had. And then, you know, we saw the benefits of what he brings to the table. He's a special athlete. Like him and his brother were like some of the most elite athletes we've seen in the NFL in a long time. And he's got size, speed, and he can hit, and he's got good instincts. And it's just, he, with his brother, with Iffy's brother, like it, there were other things going on, injuries included. But with Iffy, it seems like it's starting to click, right? Like it really came together for him last season. Like the injuries slowed him. He had his own injuries, right, that slowed him down. But then like when he finally got on the field and he kind of fought through a couple injuries that like he played with the club part of last year. Remember, like it was like, he fought through it. And, but his flexibility to play the two high, to drop down in the slot, to drop down in the box. Like if you're not running a Sam out there, then if he's the guy you drop to the linebacker level, if you're going to, and then keep Kirby up in the post at the single high. And so you can keep Branch in the nickel, but you can also blitz him off the nickel. You can drop Kirby or Iffy down into the box at the linebacker level. And you can, he's still big enough that you still get like kind of the benefits of having like a third safety type body, or I'm sorry, a third linebacker type body, but you get the speed of a safety, and that's really where he kind of took off last year. And so in an ideal world, Branch, Kirby, Iffy, they just keep doing, they can pick up where, you know, where they were at their best, and hopefully, you know, with good outside corner play, you reap the benefits of it. But the secondary has, like I said, a flexibility to go to dime now where you can put four corners out there, which you really probably couldn't do last year. No. And right. And while you don't have Gardner Johnson, I think they're okay because again, yeah. That if now you're expanding Branch to Nick or to his role from beyond nickel to safety, And you have guys that can that are outside guys that can play inside. You can find there's opportunities there. Like you have bodies that can play the roles. Is I guess what I'm saying. So it's not as clean. Like it's not like this guy's your nickel, this guy's your one safety. This it, it's there's some movement. I think the only guy, there's only two guys in the secondary that are kind of locked into their spots, and that's Kirby and Carlton Davis.
Exactly. That's what I would say too. Yep.
Right. And beyond those two, I think everyone else has a little bit of flexibility. And that's what's going to make the camp battles so intriguing, is if you're not working out at one spot, maybe another opportunity opens up. And so they have more depth now than I've seen in a long time. And if they all are healthy, it's going to look totally different than last year. You know, totally.
Man. 100%. And I agree on all the points. And I love, again, I know it's been, you know, we've said it several times in this video, but it's cool that the roster is built in a way that you can be so flexible depending on a week to week matchup and who you're facing and maybe who you have out, to your point, like someone's missing a game. Okay, we're going to go a little bit more heavy. You know, someone like a linebacker is going to get way more snaps than, you know, it just, you can shift and shape it as you please. So yeah, it's a deep room. And in general, I think it'll be cool once training camp gets going with, you know, if we're starting to read articles about Rakestraw playing really well, or, you know, something along those lines, and you're like, oh, they're going to find a way to get everybody on the field. And that's typically what they do, man. I give this coaching staff a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, because they adapt to their players, as opposed to, like you said earlier, they're not trying to force a round peg or a square peg in a round hole, right? Like they're doing their best to adjust, and they're not afraid to adjust in season.
It's not my scheme of the highway. It's, you know, winning football always. Right. So that's how it should be.
And that's, and, you know, like we've seen it, like we've seen them going from single gap to single gap to gap and a half to two gaps, like back to gap and a half. Like
they're just trying to make it work.
You know? Yes. And we get these ideas in our head that they've got to have like this guy to fill this role because of X, Y, or Z reason. And it's not, I don't think we ever really know with the defense, because they've utilized so many different styles of defense. We're all kind of just like guessing on what we think they're going to do based on what they've done. Yeah. Over the last couple of years. So inevitably something will come up, and we'll be like, oh, I did not realize that this guy was going to play inside. You know what I mean? Like, oh, or we're going to get in the camp and we're going to be like, oh man, look at Rakestraw. You can't keep him off the field because he just continues to make plays. They're going to have to find a way to get, like, that's what, with Brian Branch, that's what happened, right? Like it was instant. Like Brian Branch was immediately the second best defender on the field. Like immediately. I'd never seen anything like it. I've never seen anyone have a camp like Brian Branch did. And it all translated too. Like
immediately.
I don't know. Yeah. It's such a fortunate situation to have landed him. You could argue Aleem is more important or maybe a better defender, but I think Aiden's clear one, and I think Aleem and Branch, you can argue over who's the next best. But I think those three. Jeremy pushed back on me and said Reader would want a word, but I don't care. I think Branch is better than Reader.
I love Reader. You know, we love the big guys.
Certainly,
but yeah,
certainly.
Reader's only going to play 60-65% of your snaps.
You probably won't even play that, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I agree with you there, but yeah.
So
good though.
Flexibility again. And that's really what this whole, like, it's what this whole team is built on. And now they have hopefully the depth to be able to sustain that. So I don't think we missed anything glaring.
No, I think we hit it all on the
offensive I mean,
side of the ball.
We didn't talk about special teams, but that's just because who knows what's going to happen there, man. They're going to have like
that's going to be crazy
wealth of
competition.
Options. Well, like CJ Moore was their personal protector and the guy they used to execute fake punts. And then CJ Moore gets suspended for a year and Jalen Reeves Maben goes into that role and he still manages to make it work. And then Vaki gets drafted and you're like, oh, it makes 100% sense to use Vaki in that role to execute your fake punts. And they're like, okay, you know, you could still go Reeves Maben, but it makes sense to have Vaki. And then they re-sign CJ Moore. And so it's
Dang.
Like,
yeah, man.
What in the world is going
options
to happen?
On options.
Right. Yes. Yeah, so they've got multiple guys that can do returners, multiple guys that can play personal protector roles. They've got multiple guys that can split out a gunner. And in the past, where we've seen guys that are like, oh, that guy's pretty much just a gunner. I think those days are gone now. Like we're
Agreed.
Now looking at like, oh, this guy is RB3, but also, you know, the personal protector, or this guy is corner 5, but he's also the gunner where he could actually like get on the field and see snaps. And this is what happens with good rosters. This is you get
rosters
to the
are so advanced.
Yeah, you just start squeezing out
everything.
Guys that only do one thing. If you're not a starter, you need to be able to do more than one thing. And we're starting to see that unfold in front of us. So we'll know a little bit more when rookie minicamp kicks off, a little bit more after OTAs. We'll learn a lot more in training camp, but if you have anything, I don't know if you have anything else to add, but I feel like we've kind of touched on the important parts of how to give people a base understanding of where this roster sits and, you know, how they can flex into different situations.
Yeah. Hopefully this like painted a pretty good picture for a lot of people. Just buckle up. We're about to get into the off season. You know, you got a couple things popping up here, but then it's going to be hot. It's going to be the off season. And we got to get to the end of July, and that's when training camps will start kicking off and we'll be on our way. But yeah, it's going to be fun doing these more often. You know, this is fun having an outlet, giving fans. I'm glad fans are really enjoying it. We enjoy making them.
Just time.
Cool.
It's just a matter of time.
Exactly. Yep.
I know people are very anxious to have the POD cast back on and or whatever the name's going to be. And we've been having meetings this week to hopefully move towards that happening. We're not there yet. We're still doing what we need to do, but we're exploring options, narrowing things down, and hoping to have an answer sooner than later. But I got a lot of people on staff that want to do more of these, and it's just a matter of me having the time. So
finding
like tonight,
the time,
no, but man, look, I know you got to wake up early and I'm asking you to stay up past your bedtime, so I appreciate it.
Yep, all good.
I hope people will enjoy this one. I appreciate you staying up. I appreciate this topic. It's a good topic that I think people will enjoy, and it's a little, I don't know, people may call it, we'll probably call it dense, immaterial, and but you know what, I know there's a base for that, and so I do think people will enjoy this, and I enjoy trying to explain it as best I can. Hopefully it made sense. If not, I look forward to people's responses on Twitter. So Morgan, thanks for joining me again, buddy, and until next time, let's go Lions.